Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
This is Radio Free Redoubt, broadcasting from the Free Zones inside the American Redoubt. And we are in the heart of those Free Zones. I want to let you know that outside the wire, in occupied territory across America, you are in our thoughts and prayers. Thank you guys for tuning in. Stay encouraged. You are not alone. I want to encourage you guys to get out. Hopefully you're listening to this while you're getting ready to head out and enjoy the last of the beautiful fall weather here in the inland Pacific Northwest. It is just amazing. I know I'm going to be getting out and enjoying it. 62 degrees today, 60 tomorrow. It's, I think, just about the last of it. So take advantage of it. It's a great blessing and it's so beautiful. Oh, it's just, it's incredible. So, we want to hopefully during this time, the next 30 minutes, we want to talk about some of the current issues. I want to encourage you, shed some light of truth on some things, and hopefully inspire you and motivate you to take action on things in the fight to preserve liberty and our heritage and self-reliance. Resiliency, that's what it's all about. Okay, so the first thing I want to talk about is this article from the ARRL, and that is the American Radio Relay League. They are a nonprofit advocacy organization, nonprofit that they advocate for amateur radio, and they do a lot of stuff, kind of like the NRA of ham radio. Do a lot of stuff in Washington, D.C., try to free up more frequencies for amateur radio use, try to protect frequencies that they want to take away because they're not getting much use. And these guys go to bats for us. And the ARRL, of course, once you get in Washington, D.C., they get pretty political. And there's some people that are pretty frustrated with the ARRL. But for the most part, there are a bunch of well-meaning people who really do want to do the right thing, even if they disagree on how that should be done. So they're advocates for those of us that are in the amateur radio world. But there's a part of the ARRL that is more operational, less advocacy, less politically motivated, less get involved with legal cases. But they are actually an action item, and they are known as RACES, or ARES, the Amateur Radio Emergency Service. So what they do is they work with local. The theory is that they are there to help on a national organized level to help our government with what used to be civil defense, making sure communities can stay informed and connected and share information and help coordinate relief efforts during a disaster. That's the theory. Now, they work very closely with the government. The government actually does have its own program called RACES, R-A-C-E-S. That's the Radio Amateur Communications Emergency Service. That program's owned by the government. Well, they've pretty much become synonymous with ARES and RACES. So you got the civilian volunteer folks and you got this government program, which uses civilian volunteer ham radio operators. So usually in almost all cases, they're one and the same. The ARES members are also the RACES members. They are just members of both and they do both. Okay, so there's a little backstory here. Now, the story that's coming out is, and this is what people keep sending me, there's a communications interoperability training with amateur radios. It's called a SET, a simulated emergency test. So what I'm getting is people saying, this is pretty suspicious because Antifa is supposed to be starting this, you know, next civil war and chaos in the streets and riots November 4th. And wouldn't you know it, the government's doing this Department of Defense training drill, emergency communications plan on November 4th. What a coincidence. There's something definitely more going on behind the scenes than they're telling us. Well, okay, let me dispel some of this for you. Okay, let me shed some light on this, because that's what we're here to do. Shed light on the lies. I don't know where this started. I don't know how it began. But please, my Christian patriot brothers and sisters, use discernment. What you might not know is they do this emergency set, simulated emergency test, every year. Now, with AMRON, the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network, we follow this and any other signals intelligence source during an emergency that could benefit us by gleaning information from the airwaves about what's going on. And while they're helping governments talk to each other, because now it's this transition from, you know, civil defense to continuity of government. Now it's all about helping the government and people official with hard hats and clipboards and coffee cups and steel-toed boots and safety goggles. Those are the official people, right? And they need to be able to communicate with each other. And if you're not one of them, you don't have the little badge, you're not special. So stay out of the way. Well, that also means that a lot of times the general public are not kept informed. Or it's very filtered or, you know, watered down or whatever to protect you so you don't panic. Okay, so the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network, AMRON, is designed to help fill the gaps of the people that aren't getting communication support to make sure they get it, and also help our communities stay informed locally. So we use the Military Amateur Radio Service, MARS. We use RACES, we use ARIES, we use the Salvation Army, any of these emergency radio communications groups. We have their frequencies and we monitor those so that we can stay informed, so we can turn around and inform our local communities on things they might not otherwise get. So that's the more backdrop information. Okay, so these guys are planning this emergency set just on starting November 4th, which happens to be the November 4th also when Antifa is going to begin their riots. So black flag operations, more to this than they're telling us. Okay. Once again, they do this every year. We monitor this every year. It is this, in this case, it is a CME, just like last year, which is a coronal mass ejection. A big old huge giant electromagnetic wave comes out from the sun from this giant coronal mass ejection, which blocks out a lot of our, kills a lot of our communications. Now, what they do is they make up a scenario, any scenario. One year, FEMA was trying to, you know, get creative, and they decided to do zombies. Well, there was just a zombie scenario. They tried to make it fun, and somebody says, you need to read between the lines. This, obviously, they're planning for a massive biological type of event in our country, and they're making a joke out of something very serious by pretending they're trying to make it lighthearted. Because here's the other thing too. When they're working with the government, we've seen this in the past, massive government led or government centric, especially federal government, emergency communications plans, drills, they get abysmal turnout. People don't take it seriously. They roll their eyes. It's a pain. I have work to do. And now we have to pretend that there's an emergency. And I don't have time for this. They don't take it seriously. Now, there's some people who do. There's some people that are just like you and me, regular people. And this is just their job. And they have to work in the emergency emergency preparedness section of whatever government entity. And so they try to get creative and they try to have fun. So somebody comes up with zombies. And really, it doesn't matter what the scenario is. The point is, what if something happens? Who knows? It could be a hurricane hitting Puerto Rico or some other hypothetical event that basically wipes out your infrastructure including communications. Now, how do you overcome that? How do you coordinate help? How do you coordinate? It doesn't matter. It could be Smurfs, an invasion of Smurfs from spaceships that are programmed to chew up all of our fiber optic lines and we lose all of our communications. So how do we overcome that? It doesn't matter. Make something up. And practice using emergency communications. We try to get creative every year with the emergency communications exercise that we do with Amron. Okay, so let me help put some of this to rest. Every year, Mars, the military amateur radio service, and Ares and RACES, the ARRL, all these guys, they do this big nationwide grid down exercise. And every year, it's the same. They have poor turnout. It always reveals the same thing, and that's that they're inadequately prepared to handle a major nationwide catastrophic disruption of our communications and our power grid and infrastructure. And it also reveals that they haven't learned anything from Hurricane Katrina to Hurricane Maria or anything in between. If they have learned anything, they haven't implemented it. Now I'm talking they. Let me define they. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, their solution is to throw more dollars and to become less efficient. This is their modus operandi. That's how they operate. Now, not to disparage the guys in the ARRL or Mars or Ares or RACES, because just like any other volunteer organization, you've got a very small percentage of the people doing all the heavy lifting for the whole organization, because a lot of people sign up, but they don't train, they don't participate, they don't maintain their gear. Something happens, and when it comes to finding them on the air, they're just nowhere to be found. It's always the same hardworking, dedicated people that are there, and they do a great job if there was just more of them. And every volunteer organization will say the same thing. I don't care if it's a church, I don't care if it's Mars or Ares, RACES, or any type of volunteer organization. There's always the few heavy hitter, go-getter type of people that make it happen. And the administration is going, how can we get more of you? We need more of you. We experienced the same thing in Amron. Okay, so the guys that really do put their heart into it do a great job. There's just not enough of them. But they're going to show up and we're going to see that there's a few people that really are just consistently on the air and they're working their brains out and they're taking it seriously. They want to help their fellow countrymen and help keep communications. But the people in the government on the payroll, they act arrogant. They act superior. They don't take the training seriously. They would like to be in charge. But in the end, we're seeing this, and we'll talk about that here in just a couple minutes. In Puerto Rico, horrible, horrible situation. And the government is completely inadequate. They throw more money at it. They take charge. They hand out more clipboards and hard hats and badges. They put more people in charge and things just continue to deteriorate and less gets done. And the volunteers and the people that are showing up equipped and trained, they're restricted. You can't go here, can't go there, you got to be out there. Oh, you can't rescue people without this, falling under our authority. And now it's hurry up and wait. We've just seen this over and over. The solution is to self-deploy, preferably ahead of an event when you can see it coming, like a hurricane. Have people in place and immediately have comms up right after the event instead of trying to get people in with airfields that are not cleared and streets that are impassable. And you got to wait for the Army Corps of Engineers. You got to go through, fill out this inch-thick stack of paperwork before you can volunteer for the government. And it just turns into a big, stinking bureaucratic mess. And the folks that are there are consumed with the desire to make press and have pictures and for recruiting and talk about all the great stuff that they're doing when they really don't, when there's so many people in need. So anyway, this exercise that's coming up, it is not a big secret plot to have emergency communications in place for Antifa to start their civil war, and there's no major conspiracy going there. I'm telling you right now, And this, I really believe this Antifa rioting, you'll see it probably in the bigger cities. They're going to break stuff. Police are going to show up. They're going to tear gas some people. Some people will be arrested. And otherwise, it's going to be a flash in the pan. Now, they are not to take them lightly. They are communist revolutionaries, and things will gradually escalate as far as their tactics. They are going to become not just destructive, not just dangerous, not just disruptive, but there will come a point where they will become dangerous and a very real threat. And one of the biggest problems that is human nature is to not take a threat seriously. Okay, but then also you have to have discernment, where sometimes we see threats that aren't really even a threat. We make threats out of things that aren't. Right? And then we downplay and don't take seriously threats that really should be taken seriously, like North Korea. All right, we're just now starting to take them seriously. Now, why do we take them seriously? Because they've got a lot of funding. They've got people like George Soros, and I saw this article, Bloomberg, leftist, rag. They've got this article saying that the Hungarian Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, love that guy. Hungary, the only European Christian nation, according to their constitution, who has rejected this Islamic onslaught, sealed their borders and saying, we're not going to have a Muslim invasion in our country. No. The European Union is flipping out and saying, oh, you're racist. Well, George Soros, who is Hungarian, has been funding these organizations that are undermining these nations and advancing multiculturalism for the sake of multiculturalism, for the sake of deteriorating cultures. So now this article is trying to out Prime Minister Viktor Orban because he has called on his spies in the country to target Soros to map out his network. Now, Viktor Orban needs a medal for that. Because that's precisely, in my opinion, what our intelligence services need to be focusing on, is mapping out the networks that Soros is funding. Because he boasts of toppling countries. It's like a hobby. He gets off on it. He needs to be shut down. And Viktor Orban is working toward that end. And of course, this leftist article, Soros, whose philanthropy has supported education and pro-democracy activism in Hungary since the 1980s, has hit back at Orban himself, a former Soros scholar, accusing him of running a mafia state. So Soros now is a philanthropist, philanderer, supported education and pro-democracy. So what he's done is he has funded propaganda campaigns and pro-communist activism, not just in Hungary, but all over the world. So that should serve as a model for the FBI. Listen up. Pay attention. You need to start mapping these guys out. They are a communist threat. It should be one of your primary missions to hunt down communists in America. It's time to return to that. So, there's this radical nationalism now is spreading all over the place because the allure of anti-immigrant and Euro-skeptic rhetoric has also extended in gains at last weekend's election in the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic, they're number two on my list. Hungary's number one for countries that deserve recognition for standing up for their nationalist principles, standing up for their countries, protecting it from globalism. Hungary and the Czech Republic. If I go on vacation to Europe, that's where I want to go. I decided I don't want to spend a dime in Germany. I was stationed there. Loved it. Absolutely incredible time in my life. But what a trashy place it's turned into. So sad. So unnecessary. Okay, so let's talk about this disaster preparedness training. This training that takes place, the ARRL, Mars, Aries, RACES, and all those folks, and of course all the training that Ameron does and training exercises. There's an article here. This affects us here in the American Redoubt. There are new simulations, computer models showing how the big earthquake, the CSE, the Cascadia Subduction Zone earthquake, could play out in Seattle. So what this computer model did was build 50 different scenarios depending on this is the outcome and this is how it will affect tsunamis and potential activation of volcanoes and so on in the area if the plates shift this way. And this is what it would trigger if it shifts that way. And if it shifts in this direction, or if the epicenter is located over here versus over there. So they got 50 different scenarios and they're modeling. Now they've got the base information to model out if the epicenter and everything shifts in what direction or when and where, the outcome. So they can predict what level of liquefaction might be in this community versus that community 150 miles south versus, you know what I'm saying? So this is pretty fascinating information, especially those of us that are studying natural disasters. And there's a link to this article, and we'll put this in our highlights and resources posting. Five things to help you easily understand the big one. And of course, they define what the Cascadia subduction zone is. They've got when did the last one happen? Well, that was in January of 1700. About every 300 years. Well, we're due. And they're saying there's an 80% chance that the big one will hit sometime in the next 50 years. And that means it could happen tomorrow or a month or a year, 10 years, 20 years. But at sometime in the next 50 years, there's an 80% chance. So it's going to happen at some point. Because like clockwork, this thing's gone off about every 300 years. It shifts and the damage will be catastrophic. So they end with, should I prepare? Emergency management leaders. Let me finish up here. The area is more likely to have another deep source quake like the Nisqually one, which occurred in 2001. Chances for another one are above 80% within the next 50 years, according to them, so that they can make better preparations in response to an earthquake. But you know what? History shows they will not make better preparations. They will not do anything meaningful because one earthquake one natural disaster after another shows that they are inadequately prepared. They will not learn. The bureaucracy gets in the way. So should you prepare? It's your responsibility. Emergency management leaders encourage families to have a plan in the event of a disaster. People should prepare to survive on their own for 7 to 10 days. False. You need to be prepared for at least 30 days. Look, it's been over a month and there are people still in Puerto Rico that are stranded in communities that are inaccessible. No power, no communication. The in squalid conditions. While our government spends more and more money implementing more and more controls over people and doing less and less. Army Corps of Engineers is doing awesome. They're doing the best they can. They're still 73% without power in Puerto Rico. And as a result, 73,000 Puerto Ricans flee to Florida. Heads up, Florida. 73,000 Puerto Ricans. And this is as of October 2nd. So this is probably easily at 100,000 Puerto Ricans, which is fine. They are Americans. They're American citizens. They're not Muslims. They're not illegal aliens. They are Americans. And I'd get my family out of there too. But if you're one of the people that are trapped in one of those areas, and they're saying in the Cascadia subduction zone, you better be prepared. No help is coming for months. I didn't see the map. I was briefed by one of the elected officials who sat in on the briefing for the government's response to the Cascadia subduction zone event. There are whole communities. There's a timeline. In the first 24 hours, we're going to hit these communities. The next 72 hours, we're going to hit them. And by 96 hours, we will have reached these guys. And it just goes right down the line because of the number of resources that they have on hand and what would be coming in. So there are some communities that will be written off literally for months. Unbelievable. You better be prepared. And inaccessible. All the bridges down, roads impassable, runways and airstrips unusable. So be prepared to be self-reliant. And what do we got here? I got to cover this. I'm going to talk about more of this tomorrow night in the podcast. But I see Corn Pops, Kellogg's Corn Pops. I used to love those when I was a kid. They're redesigning their racist box. They found out that they're... cereal boxes racist. Like, I've got to read this. How could Corn Pops be racist? Well, on the back, you know, kids are sitting there eating their cereal, looking at the box. Well, there's like a shopping mall, and all these little yellow Corn Pops are all happy. But there's one brown Corn Pop, and he's the janitor. And he's pushing like a floor cleaner thing with his head earbuds in. So the only brown Corn Pop... is the janitor. I'm thinking, how is that racist? Well, because he has a job. He's the only one in the picture who has a job, who's employed. And besides that, what's dishonorable about being a janitor? That's an honorable job. But now it's racist. We've lost our minds. We've lost our minds. Hey, don't forget to support our sponsor. Contact them and tell them thank you for supporting Radio Free Redoubt. Riverfront Suites. Beautiful. St. Joe River. Fall colors. It's awesome. If you want a weekend to get away, do it. Do it soon. Go to www.riverfrontsuites.com. Patriot-owned business right on the river there. About an hour south of Coeur d'Alene. So check them out. I will talk to you guys tomorrow night. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and this is the voice of the American Redoubt. My name is your name too.